And everybody thought this was it. And he, because, you know, he was falling asleep, but I even the next day at the fire sacrifice, I couldn't stay awake either. But after the fire sacrifice, I was thinking that I might never see Sherman again. You know, I think Sherman was very old. And he didn't come to the West Coast. At least he went to Canada, where I was. As they had told us many, many stories about how you shouldn't touch Shirapala's feet because you might trip him up. And then they said, that Shirapala didn't have any pain or things. But I thought that, you know, this was a thing to do. So when Shirapala came up, God went after the fire sacrifice, after the initiation, as Shirapala was walking by, he was going very, very slowly, and he stopped right by me, and I reached out with both hands, and I touched his both feet, and I touched my head. And they were very soft and cooling. And then the next day, I went walk with Shirapala. After the day of my initiation, I didn't go to the program that Prabhupada was lecturing in Eugene, Oregon, at the university. But I stayed back to make the flower grounds. And every day I was there for 6 days in Portland, I would go door to door, and it was all covered in roses. The people had rose bushes, was a nice neighborhood that Portland was in. And I would take the Christian book, probably with a big smile on the back of the Christian book, and I would show the old ladies and say, "See this garland? It's my job to make this garland every day." And they would, you know, get there soon, and they'd run out and say, "Oh, take more. Remember that day that the initiated, I had so many big black patch bags of roses that they were about a block long. I had them all tied together, and I was towing them on a train. They were about a block long. And there's so many roses. I stayed back that day to make the garland and things, and then she probably came back in the evening from the engagement. And he'd beaten all the boys back, and he and the servant under the bar came in. And the temple room was dark, but Gus, I was empty, and I was chanting in the dark temple room. And in the hallway, there was only a very small little bulb hanging from a wire from the roof, and very dim. But I ran out there and offered obeisance to Sri Prabhupada's lotus feet. And when I looked up, he had a very big grin, ear to ear, his famous smile. And the whole room, the whole temple room, all the hallways, and they're all illuminated just like the sun. I saw a great effulgence like that, and Prabhupada was happy and tapping his name. And then he started to go upstairs. And as he was going upstairs, his servant said that Govinda was standing there, and his wife Maya Devi, that when their twin gods were born, that doctors said they would not live. But they put them in an incubator with a picture of Lord Shane in there, and somehow they lived. And so Shivana said that, "You see, if Krishna wants to save someone, no one can kill them. And if Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can save them." And then he went upstairs, and immediately his servant came running down saying that Shivana is hungry. He's been out all day, he hasn't eaten since breakfast. What he wants is a bowl of sugar and some porridge and hot milk. He'll roll the sugar in the porridge and eat that. So immediately the householders went in and made that, and was taken up to him. And next day I went for a walk with Srila Prabhupada in the big redwood forest. The trees are so big that you can drive through them. So they had holes to drive through the trees that are so big. Very large redwood trees. So Srila Prabhupada didn't speak much. And he walked very fast, and all the sannyasis were there. The way I got to walk was that I was sleeping in the driveway there, and next to our van. And my vice president, Thomas Sophie, came out and slammed a bucket of hot water and soapy water into my stomach and says, "Clean the van, Srila Prabhupada getting the van in 5 minutes." So I was inside the van scrubbing the van, and you know, Brahmananda and Vishwajana and all the big sannyasis and temple presidents came came in and sat down, and Shivakami came down, and Thomas Loken helped him with the seatbelt, and I just tossed my sponge in the bucket, and away we went. And also another devotee that was from our temple, Bhakti Dan, but he was just a couple weeks in the movement, he also came along. But the only thing I remember Shri Prabhupada saying, when I walked with him, he came up to a very large tree, and he said, "How old is that tree?" Some people said 500 years, and some said 1,000 years. And Shri Prabhupada looked up and he shook his cane and said, 1,000 years, he says, "That is a long time to stand up naked." He says, "That is the punishment for being lustful." And he sat down his cane and he walked on, and everybody was standing around talking about the philosophy, the heavy philosophy we'd never heard before. And when Shri Prabhupada walked on, Bhakti Dhyani was right behind him. Shri Prabhupada wheeled around and he said to him, he says, "You want your tree?" And he said, "Yes, Shri Prabhupada, yes." And everybody was shocked at that and looking around saying, who brought this guy along? And Shri Prabhupada was very surprised. But he just turned around and walked away. And that was the only thing he said on that walk. And next hour, I left Shri 75, was when he came and stayed in the house where I was living. The young house we had completely, the whole floor of the house and completely unfurnished. And all we had to do was just pick up one apple box of peace and move downstairs. That's all the stuff we had in those days. But Shri, when he first came, the first thing he said was, "Where are the locks?" He said that these cabinets, these drawers, that door in there, they all must have locks. So the handyman was sent out to buy locks. And Shivani took up a little office in the front, a small room, and next day I was hanging around there. And I saw that Nandi Kumar brought in his lunch and sat down before him, and Shivani immediately said, "The rice is too cold." And he said, Nandi Kumar said, "I told Shri Prabhupada, I'll take it back and heat it up." And he says, "No," he says, "cold rice is terrible. Warm over rice is poison." He says, "Never mind. Tomorrow I'll cook for myself." So the next day, the sannyasis and Prabhupada's servants and myself, we all had a cooking class with Shri Prabhupada. That Shri Prabhupada showed how he makes his own lunch. He said he always did this. And he said many times that day that every gentleman should learn how to cook. And that when he was a child, the men would stop by the side of the road and cook for themselves. He emphasized that three things will happen if you cook for yourself. He said that it will be very delicious, you'll eat it all, and you'll never become sick. So Shri Prabhupada showed how he had a little three-tier burner that he could cook the rice. He could cook the dal on the bottom and the rice in the middle and the sabji on top. At the same time, he made a few chapatis, rolled them, made them perfectly. And then just in just a few minutes, half an hour, that he had rice dal and sabji, the rice was steaming hot. And so I took it away and ate it. Like that. And I went for a walk with Shri Prabhupada on that visit to Denver, Colorado, to where I was living for 15 years. And that was the only time Shri Prabhupada and I spoke that I was at the back of the line, all the big devotees and sannyasis. Actually, the other interesting thing over there was that the presidential limousine of President Nixon, who had just been out of power, but the presidential limousine, bulletproof limousine, was on display, and people were paying $2 to see that at the mall. And one devotee went up and took a picture of Shri Prabhupada from the back of the Krishna book and showed it to him and asked to borrow that for Shri Prabhupada's 6-day visit there, and the guy said, "Sure." And so I got to ride with Shri Prabhupada in the big limousine and go for a walk. $51 for one day instead of my day. And I was at the very back of the line, there was about 25 devotees there, and Kurukshetra told Sri says, Radhadhara Das here, he sometimes does 100 books at the zoo on Saturday. And Sri Prabhupada immediately jumped off the sidewalk and hopped over the rock and came running back to the back of the devotees, and he runs my nose. I didn't even know he knew my name. And so when he runs my nose, he says, oh, big books. And I said, no, Sri Prabhupada, mostly coloring books and small. And he said, oh, small. And he walked on. But then I was right behind him now. And we walked up to the gate of the zoo. And Sri Prabhupada stuck his head into the gate of the zoo. And he asked me, he said, can we go in? I said, no, Sri Prabhupada, everything's closed now. He said, oh, closed. So that was the extent of my association with Sri Prabhupada that has carried me throughout all these years. The good training of Bhadak Das and all the other nice devotees that I've met throughout the years, and the dedication of the presidents and to keep the classes going and book distribution going and the wonderful things and the wonderful festivals we've had. Except for a few other very small instances. Just like once I was in Los Angeles and Govardhana Dharya, the book distributor from Australia, who lived in Denver at the time, and I was very miserable, and we actually had nothing to do in the middle of the afternoon. So we were thinking that probably servants up there, you know, they maybe, you know, go up there and see them, they might have some nectar to tell us, or give us some dust, or especially we're interested in sweets. So we heard that they had a big bottle of rasgullas and gulab jamuns and they had to eat any time you wanted. And so finally we got the courage to go up there, and we went up the stairs to Sri Prabhupada's room, and there was no guard, which usually is. And walked up there, and he convinced me that I should knock. I knocked, and we were both very floored that Sri Prabhupada answered his door himself. And we were startled at this, because we would think that, you know, a very, you know, big world leader of a worldwide movement, you know, you wouldn't get to see him very easily, that he's busy. And so we started to battle, we didn't know you were here. We didn't want to speak to you. Is there anyone else we can speak to? Yeah. And so I just closed the door on us. But that was about a little instance like that, and a few other instances throughout the years. Small instances, maybe a short moment, but I brought the ashrams and things. That was about the extent of my association, but Achyunanda Swami here. Achyunanda Das here. He has so much association with Sri Prabhupada. Are you ready?
Prabhupada would begin the teaching of Bhagavad Gita from the fourth chapter. Evam parampara pratamimam raja shogdu sakalena mahata yoga mishta parampara. Today, as his appearance day, that means he came, how did he appear to us? You may know the story, came on and the Brajavasi told us, he'd already taken sannyas. He had come out with his Srimad Bhagavatam, English translation, by the order of his spiritual master to bring the message of Mahaprabhu to English speaking world. Hey, face the truth. And was living in Radha Damodar Temple, the holiest place which where the Goswamis used to meet in the back, where Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kuti Samadhan, and where the six Goswamis would discuss his teachings with Lord Chaitanya. So his life was perfect. He still came away. So, no, I'm going to preach somehow in foreign countries and got his ticket. Free ride, actually, with the free passage to America. And arrived with nothing. Slowly, slowly, some devotees helped him to get his storefront in 26th Avenue. Before that, he had to live sometimes uptown, and then all of his typewriter and everything was stolen. And he told me then, I thought, a lot of people will say, oh, but he always knew. Now, he would go down to the docks, down to the harbor, and talk to the harbor master. Is there any boats, when is the next boat leaving for India? And he wrote to one of his godbrothers, Dr. Sridharmana. It was a standing order of his guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, that all my sannyasis somehow preach to the Western world. Starting really, Bhaktivinoda Thakur began to present Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message in Western ideas to understand by Western. And the Bhaktisiddhanta, one or two German disciples came back with a bon mirage, but others, Bhaktisiddhanta said, I'm sending my sannyasis to the West and they're coming back in suits. They're getting converted. They're becoming Westerners. So one of the sannyasis is Bhakti Raksha Sridhar Maharaj, and Sridhar Maharaj never went. Health was poor, and this and that. And so when Prabhupada went, he supported him very much. And Prabhupada wrote him a letter, I don't think I'm going to make any mission here. The people are too full. It's all hippie class, they are very, this one he says, they are also very rude. And he wrote back to Prabhupada, start a mission in America or die there. And later on, when I was in India some years later, also Prabhupada was traveling around the world, said, I may never come back to India. I may go on travel in the Western countries. So, went on, he lost one apartment, came to the, you know the word sleep, there are a lot of Indians who did. Muchi. Juta. Juta's on the head. The sleazy, the Anglesi meant sleazy. Mushy is sleazy. The sleaziest neighborhood in New York is the Bowery. He stayed with a hippie couple, man and woman. He said that I had to sleep in the bed next to them. And sometimes they were not sleeping. Keep his food in their refrigerator next to their rotten food. And I defy any rishi from Satya Yuga, Vishwamitra, Vishishta, Vaishishta Muni to do tapasya like that. Spend one winter in New York, 1966, Kali Yuga, with two crazy, filthy hippies. That's a tapasya. Because Vishwanath Chakrabarti also says, troubles that we experience in the fire of preaching are worth a thousand times more tapasya, because in tapasya you have a program, like we're doing Chaturmasya. On this month we do this, and this month we do that, and on Ekadasi we know what's coming. But like any boxer would say, the punch that hurts the most is the one you don't see coming. So troubles that suddenly come in the line of preaching are worth much more than tapasya of the rishi. Then, if you read the book of Mukunda, he found him a place in the storefront, 22nd Avenue, and I was 18 years old, 17, 18 years old. I'd been doing yoga, I read the books of Mayavadis and Swamis that had come. I met some Swamis, and someone told me there's a Swami Lower East Side chanting Hare Krishna. And he was there sitting around the ground, on the floor. No, there was no Vyasa Sun, no anything. And he looked like, I would say, the president of several galaxies. Yeah, that's too, not too loud? Oh. He looked like the CEO of several galaxies. He looked like one of the faces of Chaturmukh Brahma. And I said, well, let's see what he says. Because everything we've learned in books of all the yoga, anything ending in Hinduism is void. Because there's two big thoughts in the world. Western thought, Jewish, Christian, Muhammad, Muslim, there's an invisible man in the sky. And he's got 10 rules. And if you break them, you have one life. And if you break those rules, you go to hell forever. And then, huh? Or, well, we don't like that. That's a limited. So the unlimited, anything, no form, no more deity, no more dinar, everything, wide open spaces, just light, light, light. And shanti, shanti, there is no shanti. How long can you sit in shanti? Pretty soon the senses will come and arouse you. So this is the limit. So Prabhupada was answering these questions from Bhagavad Gita. How Krishna can be a person and be an unlimited person. Many so many examples of the sun. The sun cannot exist without sunshine. The sunshine is not the sun. The sunshine can dry up a puddle of urine, but there's no urine up in the sun. So we are little rays of the sun. Krishna is the sun planet, like the sun god from that sea. We are one jiva. The sun, one jiva, is the sun. So once somebody asked Prabhupada a challenging question, atheistic, trick question. This is the answer. Can God make a rock so heavy he can't pick it up? Prabhupada says, yes. Then he's not unlimited. And he says, then he'll pick it up. Well, then he can't make a rock that's too heavy. Then he will make one. And then he'll pick it up and make another and pick it up and on like this. Krishna is always expanding his energy and then enjoying his energy. When he's satisfied, he will expand it again and enjoy it again. He's Atmarami. He doesn't need anything but himself. Atmarami. Doesn't need anything but himself, but he expands himself and enjoys it. There was always a problem of getting the dishes done. You don't have that problem now, right? Everybody pitches in and does the dishes. Well, we were there by now, there were about 20 devotees that come in the 26th Second Avenue, see the Prabhupada, listen to his lectures, chant Hare Krishna. And so I was a cook, myself, Kirtananda. Prabhupada taught us about 20, 25 preparations in that stack pot. Where do you go? In that three section pot. And other, but we got more and more pots. So Prabhupada said, he said, the cook cannot do the dishes. It is a conflict of interest. This is true, because if I say, oh, I want to use that pot, but I don't want to cook in that pot because I'm going to have to wash it. So you have someone to do. Well, I was cook, and we couldn't have anybody do the dishes too regularly. So Prabhupada called us all in, eight of us. He said, everyone take one day and do the dishes. It was silence. Someone said, Monday. Someone else said, Wednesday. Then there was more silence. Prabhupada said, I will do Thursday. So a few months passed and more people were coming.
Yeah.
And so he ordered those. So Prabhupada told Brahmananda, buy a signboard so that people know when the lectures and the kirtans and the prasadam is being started. So he got, went out, came back, no signboard. Prabhupada, well, that was only Swamiji. Swamiji, the signboard costs $55. We don't have money for rent. He said, get one signboard! He went out, I think he opened his box and gave him some money. Comes back with that, you may have seen a picture of that black felt signboard with the plastic letters. Put it up there. That night, 75 people showed up. And Prabhupada lectured on Yogakshemam Yahamaham that I will provide. Because earlier that week, he came up to the kitchen and wanted to inspect. Let me see what you have. So we had, it was just an apartment kitchen, four burners, but fortunately next to it was a big pantry closet. So I showed the firm, but we have 100 pounds of rice, 100 pounds of dal, 100 pounds of wurdi dal, 100 pounds of sugar, 100 pounds of potato, 100 pounds of this, 100 pounds of flour, 100 pounds of white flour, 100 pounds. Then we stuffed into that. And Prabhupada goes, That night, his speaking place now is packed. I'd say with like half the size, the width of this room, into the street. Packed. And Prabhupada was explaining that if you take the spiritual life, Krishna will maintain. Krishna's the ultimate enjoyer, and he enjoys seeing his devotees in his service. Because we are non-different than him. But he was enjoying. We're also expansions of his energy. Don't be feel that you will be poor. In our kitchen we have 100-pound potato, 100-pound rice, 100-pound dal, 100-pound. You commie people, you work so hard in your office job. Do you have 100-pound rice? Do you have 100-pound potato? You don't have 100-pound anything. And we are just chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. We have 100-pound everything. Yeah. And my basket was full of money. Collection basket. How this comes to us is the parampara. Krishna says that at the Kurukshetra. And our parampara again comes from Kurukshetra when Krishna and the Dwarka Vasis come to meet with all the Yadus at the solar eclipse and to perform pujas there. Also, and the Brajavasis also say that Krishna is coming very near to Vrindavan. If we go, we can meet. And all the Brajavasis got into bullock carts and came to meet Krishna at Kurukshetra. Same Kurukshetra as Bhagavad Gita was spoken, but for another purpose now. And yet the same purpose, because the parampara is again going to be established here at Kurukshetra. First with Arjuna, and now something else. Krishna's meeting with all the Yadus, all of the great kings, and Ugrasena and Bhoja dynasty, and then besides the Brajavasis have come. They're not going to closely mix with all these kings. They're cowherd boys and girls. And our fathers are here. So Subhadra says, I'll bring us away from this crowd, and Balaram and Krishna will come. I'll go first, so the Brajavasis don't think there's some big Kshatriya chariot coming out. And then Balaram, and then Krishna coming in other chariots. Sound familiar? Subhadra, Balaram, Jagannath coming. Three in chariots. And they meet with Devasi's mother, Yasoda Nandamara's counting poison, and then still further apart, they meet with the gopis. Someone just asked me, why did Lord Chaitanya do his last years of his life in seclusion in Puri? Because of this kind of Ratha Yatra. When the Ratha Yatra leaves the Puri Jagannath temple, it comes to Gundicha temple. Lord Chaitanya saw Kurukshetra now. When Krishna met with Ratha, came in three chariots, and Radharani says, we cannot love you here. Come back to Vrindavan. Come back to where? In the dham, where the Prema Rasa or Madhurya Rasa can be. He doesn't. He cannot. And then he gives him, I'm everywhere, I'm the Paramatma, I'm the soul of your heart. I am like the sunshine, I am Brahmajyoti, I'm spread into every atom that you took. Don't tell us about jnana and karma yoga or yoga meditation, Paramatma. We're not satisfied with Paramatma, we're not satisfied with your all pervasive. We want you only to return to Vrindavan. Yeah. He doesn't leave them there. But in Jagannath Puri Ratha Yatra, when Mahaprabhu is there, that chariot, three chariots, come from Jagannath temple, and then Mahaprabhu himself, the chariot gets stuck, and Maharaj Pratabhudra raises elephants. They couldn't move it. Mahaprabhu let them move. So that Krishna will come to Gundicha Mandir. Gundicha Mandir is surrounded by beautiful gardens. Sound familiar? That Gundicha Mandir he saw as Vrindavan. Why did that need to be done? Because when Krishna meets Radha in Kurukshetra, he could not come back. And Krishna expands his enjoying potency. Gladini Shakti is Radharani first. Like picking up the rock, can't pick it up, expands his pleasure potency, Gladini Shakti, then it becomes more. Then he expands it and enjoys it. Now, at the Kurukshetra, after having left Vrindavan, Rajagopi is now meeting them again. It is to me. This is a rock he can't pick up. He cannot answer the plea of the Brajavasis to return. And then he has to say, I have to measure the Hladini potency, the ecstatic love potency, and then he becomes Mahaprabhu. Rasaraj Mahabhav Dvyakarupa. The separation, get this right, because when I read, when Prabhupada came out with Nectar of Devotion, you'll read about the different symptoms of the devotees. Mother Yasoda is walking this way, oh, Srinivasa is coming, and the Nanda Maharaja is pacing up and down, and the Gopis are crying of separation, and the cows are weeping. And I looked up from the Nectar of Devotion, I said, what kind of heaven is this? Doesn't sound much fun. And Jess, and Prabhupada is such a genius psychologist, as soon as I went back to the page, there it says, it may seem like these pastimes are suffering and worrisome and anxiety, but they're all ecstatic. Perverted reflection. When we see a horror movie, you see destruction and blood and guts, and you come out and say, wow, that was great. We're enjoying it. The actors who play in it are enjoying it, even though they're dying. What?
I'm just wondering,
huh?
I'm just wondering if other people want to read offerings.
Okay, is it time? Because I'm coming to the answer now.
Okay.
So, all these are enjoyable. So then, seeing that he cannot respond to the love of Madhurya, because I must come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rasa Raj Mahabhav Duyakaru. Mahabhav, moods of Radha and her complexion, golden complexion, as Mahaprabhu combined. Now I always had this question. So then, he came for three reasons. Advaita Charya's praise, to answer Advaita Charya. To spread Harinam Kirtan and the Yuga Dharma, and to appreciate and measure and reciprocate the Mahabhava of Madhuji. After having done that now what comes next? What comes next is from Swarup Damodar, Ramananda Rai, Gadadhar Pandit, Sanatan Rupa Sanatan, Raghunath Das Goswami, Vishwanath Chaturvedi, Baladeva Jivan, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta, to Prabhupada. That's what comes after that to us. The end, okay, of the beginning. Who is next? Someone's next?
By the way, we didn't want you to stop.
He said he gave me a signal.
No, I'm just asking a question.
Oh, I thought you gave me the signal.
No, I'm just a master of ceremony. I'm the DMC. I'm just asking a question. There's somebody that wants.
Yes, there is. Well, I don't know. Yes. For a little while and then they fall back down. The question is, impersonal is to acquire any spiritual benefit. It's what they don't have any suffering for a while. Everything, you only remain in impersonal moksha as long as Brahmajyoti, as long as you keep remembering the pain of having birth and rebirth like that. But pretty soon, not having anything to do, not having any lila, not having any service, they again fall down.
Does the Dalai Lama actually reincarnate like this?
I don't know what the Dalai Lama is doing, so I don't know. But the first thing that catches the Maya body is social service. So I'm just saying now, the Dalai Lama has been busy with trying to free Tibet. So, if he has a universal Brahmajyoti vision, even the Buddhists don't even go up to Brahmajyoti, they just go to the causal ocean, that is, a liquid in the dark, nirvana, to destroy the whole universe. But he's interested in freeing Tibet, a nation. So he's starting to become attached to social service of a nation, of a government, attacked by Chinese, taking a that's not the universal Buddhism. Buddhism is not the difference. I have to say Tibet. Prabhupada, when he first met Bhaktisiddhanta, said to Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada said to Bhaktisiddhanta, what about Gandhi's movement? We have to be free. You got to stop?
Well, yes, the others want to speak too.
Okay, they do. He was right. And he said, nation saving is not so important. Become Krishna conscious, and the whole world will be happy.
Wanted to share a few things. I don't know how many people in here have read this. Miracle on Second Avenue. Has anyone had the opportunity? You have. It's an incredible book, and you really feel like you're right there. It's by Mukunda Maharaj, yeah. So you really feel like you're right there, just like when Guru was just speaking about the early days. So there were just a few passages that I picked up that I thought everyone would enjoy hearing. And he goes into great detail about the Beatles and all of that coming a little later, so there's a lot of nectar in here. So Mukunda Maharaj was in a bad situation. Like he had met Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had been teaching them. And at one point, him and Janaki, Jimmy's sister, they decided they wanted to get out of the city for a while and go to the country and just kind of live in peace. So a friend of his had, his parents had two cabins. So him and Janaki were in one cabin, and his friend was in another cabin. So when they went to turn the water and went to get a drink of water, his water didn't work. So he went next door to the next cabin to get water and turned it on. He's getting his glass of water. And he hears sirens, police sirens. So he goes, oh, I wonder what that is. So all of a sudden the police pull up, they come inside, and they arrest him on drug charges. And then this girl, this 15-year-old girl, comes out of the room, and then he's in trouble for that. They say, Henry, this is it, you've had it. He goes, my name isn't Henry. Anyway, it's just a terrible, the chapter is called, The Nightmare. So he's arrested, he's put in jail, and he says, as I was being arrested, it occurred to me that this event had the potential to turn my musical career into complete shambles. He was a professional musician. Publicity like this scared people. Although I was well known and slightly idolized by a few people in the jazz underworld, and although I had made the grade in that world with kind of twisted fame, my bubble had burst, now I felt it was me and my partner Jan, alone, against the rest of the world. And then the phone rang. And after he hung up the phone, his girlfriend says, who was that? Asked Jan when I hung up the phone. It was a Swami. He says, geez, I never thought he'd call. Maybe this whole arrest thing is a sign. Maybe we should just chuck the whole thing and live more simply. Move out to the country or to somewhere else in the world. Someplace like India. What do you think? I don't want to hang around for the court case. Anyway, it goes on and on, but this small, not really small, but seemingly small gesture on Srila Prabhupada's part, that he was so personal. The amazing thing about it was Mukunda Maharaj said none of his other friends really bothered to call. So when I read this, it showed me again how important it is for us to be personal, with each other. Someone's having a hard time. Prabhupada was also known for being so concerned about his disciples' health. On one of the memories tapes, Gurdas was talking about a girl named Shama who fell ill. And Prabhupada was extremely concerned in giving her medical advice and checking up on her. So I just thought, again, it was a really good lesson to us to try to follow in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps. Mukunda Maharaj was making the point that, in our neophyte stage, we would just kind of, you're not that body. I'm sick, I don't feel good, you're not that body. Just keep going, But we really do have to see the body as our service to Krishna, taking care of it. So I thought that was a great pastime. So this was in the Bowery, and Prabhupada would be giving class there. And in the middle of the class, it says, this man kind of, he says, I was sitting with everyone else in the rug, trying to listen attentively. I noticed this drunk come in out of the corner of my eye. His stench hit me, and I exchanged glances with the other regulars. I didn't want to interrupt the Swami and make a scene by throwing him out. Also, I didn't think it would be very kind or loving or spiritual to remove him, even though I found his presence offensive. I couldn't be certain if the Swami was bothered by him or if he even noticed. The unwelcome visitor stumbled resolutely toward the Swami's sitting place. We all just sat there as if suspended in time, anxiously watching the odd and potentially dangerous situation unfold. The drunk reached the lectern, groping inside his coat for something. What would it be? A rock? A knife? A gun? I was ready to spring forward if anything untoward happened. After a few seconds that seemed like eons, the man withdrew his hand and pulled out a roll of packaged toilet paper. He plunked it down on the lectern in front of the Swami. What is this? The Swami asked. The drunk spun around and teetered away to the center of the room, where he fell into a cross-legged position on the rug. The Swami smiled at the strange guest. Thank you very much, he said. Thank you. Thank you. Then he looked at his audience. Just see, he said. It is a natural tendency to give some service. Just see. He's not in order, but he thought, here is something. Let me give some service. That is Dharma. So I thought that was also a really amazing pastime of Srila Prabhupada, how you know, some small act that someone performs, even in such a, you know, a difficult condition, how much Prabhupada appreciated, and really how much advancement that man made. And if any, if you just let me know when it's time to stop, because I don't want to take anybody else's time.
Pardon?
Am I done?
I do have some people.
Okay, I'll stop here. Anyway, thank you very much, and again, I really recommend this book. It's just, it's filled with nectar. It's the kind of book that you can't put it down. It's wonderful.
What can we get?
If it's not in the bookstore yet, which it might be, it will be there very soon.
Dear Srila Prabhupada, it was 1983 in Montreal. I was such a lost soul, rebelling against what I would describe as the mechanical and unconscious living of everyone around me. Despite such rebellion against the spiritually devoid influences I felt constantly bombarded with, I had no clue about how to achieve freedom from the prison of my mind and senses. I didn't even realize how deeply conditioned I was. But fortunately, by then, as you know, I had been living only 11 blocks away from what turned out to be your Montreal temple on Peanut Boulevard. And oh, how powerfully purifying is anything associated with you. On several occasions in my youth, either while roaming the streets playing or doing my newspaper run, I had a glimpse of your weirdly dressed devotees walking around with an enigmatic cloth bag wrapped around their right hand. That marked me and intrigued me. That curiosity about your devotees, I believe, must have kick-started the Chaitodharpanamarjanam process for me, the purification of my heart. Then while at college, one of your disciples stopped me on my way to class and gave me a Bhagavad Gita, which stayed on my shelf for 3 years. Still, 3 years later, I finally tried to study it a bit. Nothing made sense. I was just too thick still, but your unusually long name printed at the bottom of the front cover caught my attention, and I felt compelled to learn it. So, while fasting for higher awareness and eating wheat grass like a cow, I was dropped out of college. I was wandering in the streets of Montreal, repeatedly saying in an audible manner, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. Somehow, Lord Krishna allowed me to chant the holy name of his pure devotee. I did not know who you are. I barely understand you today. I couldn't understand your Bhagavad Gita. So what to speak of grasping who Lord Krishna is? No. But even before talking to any devotee or visiting my neighborhood temple, somehow I was allowed to connect with you by the chanting of your holy name. I was somehow magnetized by that repeated chanting of your name. For many years now, I'm convinced that this chanting of your name is the match that lit the gunpowder of my much-needed purification. By March 84, a friend invited me to come to the Sunday Love Feast you established. and to stay at the temple for a few days. Again at that moment, like with the compelling feeling to chant your name, Krishna allowed me to understand that my highest welfare resided in not resisting. So I accepted the offer. And the rest is history. 6 months later, you allowed me to seal our deal, and I officially received acceptance into your Vaishnava family. It's now been 27 years since I committed to mold my life to follow the simple process you so mercifully and clearly laid out for us. And like no others, your divine grace and Lord Krishna know how many ups and downs there's been for me since then. Yet, whatever little progress I've made, I owe it to your divine grace's mercy in the form of your holy name, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Your devotees and followers, your recorded words, your unlimited opportunities you created for serving the Lord of the universe, and of course, for the remnants of foodstuffs offered the Lord. I lost my biological father to a heart attack when I was 12 years old. I have looked for a father figure ever since. I have since then artificially latched on to different personalities in an attempt to fulfill my need for complete shelter, only to be frustrated and or feeling taken advantage of. But as the years go by, and as I realize more and more how long you've been in my life, that quest is put to rest. You are my real father and Lord, birth after birth. Srila Prabhupada, I'm still a lost soul, but by your mercy, I'm your lost soul. You have allowed me to greatly reduce the scope of my wandering. And by now, at 2 months away from turning 50, you've blessed me to understand that only activities related to participating in the spreading of your mission is worth getting involved with. So that's where I wander. And I hope that when Lord Krishna decides that it's time for me to leave this body and move on, I will be granted the irreplaceable fortune to again remember you and chant your holy name, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Thank you, Arjuna Guna. Now we hear from Ravani and Malika, followed by Tamai.
Our father just left to Hawaii this morning, so we're presenting this offering to him from all of us.
2011 Vyasa Puja offering to A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada by his disciple Haridhar Das. Although I wanted to personally present this offering to Srila Prabhupada at the Alastra Iskcon Temple, I had to proceed to the airport, and therefore my daughter, Ramani Amalika, is presenting it on our behalf.
First of all, I offer my limited dandavat to pranam to my Diksha Guru, Jagat Guru Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, and the same unlimited dandavat to pranam to my Shiksha Guru, Srila Bhaktivedanta Narayana Goswami Maharaj, and I offer my dandavat pranam to our entire Guru Varga and the assembled devotees.
Through your world, we now book the Bhagavad Gita as it is. You broadcast the message that Sri Krishna is the supreme control of all living entities. As a manifestation of the Lord, you are also controlling us. In fact, a devotee once asked an acharya in their line what the bona fide guru does when they initiate someone. The answer came back that such a guru enters the heart of the disciple and asks for one chaita guru to let him take over after Paramahansa leaves. The bona fide guru begins sweeping the heart of the disciple and eventually prepares a setting for Sri Sri Radha and Krishna to come and accept our internal service to them.
This also reminds me of the Vedashri Guru
Sri Prabhupada delivered in Washington during the bicentennial celebration, where he noted that if he wanted, he would always be in our hearts, as well as in his books, pictures, and other representations. Now that you've returned to Electra, I am aware of your influence on your decision to leave and then move back to Electra, and I want to express my gratitude to you for your great influence on this community, by which it has become such a wonderful place for devotees to associate.
Along the way, I have wondered about the reasons why I was compelled to move in the first place. Of course, part of it is that we were able to follow your advice to seek the best association available. And from it, we learned that any change we may be seeking depend on the mercy of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. In fact, by your mercy, I can recognize that we are all powerless and produce any overall change, for only Krishna and specifically acharyas like you are in control. Therefore, any significant changes must go through you. You are in control, and it is internally up to you and Sri Krishna to make the arrangements for keeping Lord Chaitanya's movement on track.
In a related way, I also learned that it is a self-defeating truth to criticize anyone, for by doing so that meditation produces a bridge of consciousness and that will eventually cause one to adopt the very characteristic one is opposing, and at worst could open the hellish door of upright. There are plenty of examples given in Vedic literature that the service as a warning for us to avoid such criticism. For example, the case of the Brahmin who became enamored with a prostitute, or the example of two Brahmins who came to a village where one settled in the temple and the other was forced to live next to a prostitute. When the time of death arrived, the Yamadutas visited the temple Brahmin because he ridiculed and maligned the reputation of the other Brahmin who only had good thoughts about his counterpart and was therefore visited by the Vishnudutas. In closing, therefore, I want to express my sincere gratitude to you, Srila Prabhupada, for controlling my life and my family for all our best interests. Hare Krishna, your servant, Haridhar Das.
As you know, life is a configured network of interconnected events that is too difficult to analyze in terms of cause and effect. Give you a small idea about who I am, where I come from. I grew up in Bombay in India. I was born in a Tamil family. I grew up eating meat. My objective in life was to make a lot of money. And I was good at studies, and so I came to the U.S., got a PhD, and then I went to Boston. I was a postdoc, and I lived in Boston for 4 years. And at the start of my stay in Boston, at the end of the first year, I had a strange desire to stop eating meat, and stop eating eggs, and give it up one by one. And my friends and my family asked me what happened. And I said, I feel bad for the chicken that I'm eating. And I was in Boston for 4 years. The third year, somebody told us about this content in Boston. We lived on Commonwealth Avenue, so it was close to our apartment. And we tried to look for it and find it, and we could never find it. And my close friend who was living there, he would go regularly.
and my wife and I, we would go on Palm Ave, and we would walk exactly the area it would tell us to, and we would never see the thing. We did that about 2-3 times, and then we gave up. Then we moved again to, and then after moving again to, we started coming to the temple. So I can analyze this in the following way. I'm a Brahmin, I'm not supposed to eat meat, and I did for a large part of my life, so I'm really a Shudra. And so I didn't have a qualification to look for, to find temple which could purify me. So I couldn't find this ISKCON temple. Somehow, because I stopped eating, for whatever reason, I could never explain it to anybody really why I stopped eating. Then I started coming here, maybe because of the years I spent without. And then I found devotees, and once you find devotees, then your life is perfect, as everybody says, and it's true, it's absolutely true. So, about a month ago I realized what happened, because I started reading Prabhupada's Leelamrita. In that it mentioned that Srila Prabhupada stayed in Chester Street in Boston. And I live in Chester Street, studying in Chester Street for the most part of the 4 years actually. Chester Street is an extremely small street. Look at the length of the street. It extends from this door to maybe the parking lot. And there are a few villages there. And so I'm sure Srila Prabhupada, you know, you walk on that street, you live there for some time. And my belief is that it was because he stayed there that it purified him. And that's why I had this irrational need to stop doing what I was doing. So that's my offering to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.
Followed by Father Asuro.
I feel that if I get a chance to glorify Prabhupada every day, every minute of the day, it would never be enough. Although I don't really know how to do it, but I decided to be really brave and say something. Dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept my humble obeisance at your lotus feet. His Holiness Mahavishnu Maharaj used to say that Prabhupada is worshipped around the clock, every minute of the day. Maybe you all already know, just like we have our Guru Puja here at 7:20 or 7:30, and the next moment another temple is doing their Guru Puja at 7:20, because in ISKCON we have the standard, and all of our temples are the same standard. So as the earth is moving, Guru Puja is being performed somewhere, every moment of the day, 24 hours around the clock, 7 days a week. So this is really something that does not happen. You never see anyone being worshipped. Maybe there is somebody who is worshipped once a year, but around the clock, every minute of the whole day, 7-11, the whole year is really very special. And from now on, this will go on for thousands and thousands of years. And of course, it is not done as a chore. Each day, always, each day, it is done with so much love, devotion, and appreciation, and enthusiasm. Many times we meet people, especially Indian people, we tell them that Prabhupada is bona fide spiritual master from the most bona fide disciplic succession. He can give you Krishna. And sometimes, often they say, they tell us that you say that because you're from ISKCON and you ISKCON people are very fanatic about Prabhupada. How do you know there's no one else like him? You say only Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, only Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, only Prabhupada's book, only ISKCON. They say, everyone likes the process the best, their books which everyone should read. So why only Prabhupada? Not only some Indian people say that, but others also, and sometimes even from our second and third generation devotees, and sometimes even some older devotees that may forget. So, but this we're not exaggerating. That is true, Prabhupada is most special. Anyone can see what he has done in the world and continues to do so. It is ever increasing, Vardhanam, all over the world, in every town and village. No one ever did what Prabhupada has done. And no one can ever do that in the future too. His books will go on for 10,000 years at least. He is sent by Lord Chaitanya as his special servant to give pure Krishna consciousness to everyone in the whole world. And that is very special. Lord Chaitanya came only 525 years ago. Prabhupada is giving us 100% pure devotion to Krishna, getting the Mahamantra from Prabhupada, and while Prabhupada is not personally present from his representatives, is getting the Mahamantra as it is from Lord Chaitanya himself. And that is why it has the same potency, purity, and power. You can see it in the proof. That is all around us. A new person comes, starts chanting and reading his books, and very quickly he makes spiritual advancement. No one except Prabhupada can claim to take us back home to Godhead in one life if we follow his instructions. This is not an exaggeration. Prabhupada doesn't just say that to maybe encourage us. He means it. He knows it. We can see that proof from the lives of the great Vaishnavas who have already gone back to Godhead in this lifetime. So in conclusion, yes, although there may be other bona fide sampradayas with their acharyas, but they do not have Lord Chaitanya and they do not have the most merciful, magnanimous representative like Prabhupada, even if we had 10,000 years and 24 hours every day, still we will not tire hearing Prabhupada's glories and pastimes, and we will never tire hearing serving him. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Please engage me in your service eternally. Servant of your servant, your granddaughter, Srila Prabhupada.
One time in Los Angeles, me and Rakshana were guarding, we were at the bottom of the stairs where Prabhupada stayed in his rooms up in the Los Angeles temple. There were three rooms, very nice rooms, big. And so we were at the bottom of the steps. And we were guarding. It was in the afternoon, nobody's around, everything's quiet. And, you know, Prabhupada was very unpredictable. He never knew what he had. Prabhupada would sometimes just walk around the temple and just look, like, even in Mayapur at night, he would do that. He'd inspect things and see everything. So we were at the bottom guarding his steps, you know, so anyone couldn't just, you know, go up and down. And this is a side part, but of course we got the whole plate. Most of the time probably didn't eat very much actually. And then they would these big plates full of all kinds of things. And so we ate it all. And we didn't get sick. And we thought, well, this proof is this transcendental. So anyway, so one time I was all alone, and I was at the bottom of the steps, and I was just looking, and all of a sudden, the Prabhupada was at the top of the steps, and so I just stood up and looked at this, and Prabhupada came out and stopped at the top and looked down at me. And other devotees have told me they've had this experience. So Prabhupada stopped and looked into my eyes. And I can still remember it. And this is like 1975. And it's just, you know, you always want to know, you know, prove or whatever. You know, it's just the potency, the power, you know, the any little thing, you know, so many words were said about any little thing Prabhupada did was so, there's no words for it actually, except the meaning of Sanskrit or something, you know. But he stopped and he looked, and you know, it's like timeless, because when Prabhupada was here, it was actually timeless. I mean, we didn't, it was timeless. We didn't think, like, we never thought that Prabhupada would ever leave, actually. We never even dreamed of it. It was like, it was like 100 years or, you know, we didn't. It was just some big, totally ecstatic spiritual experience that we were in, and we were just, it's just an unbelievable thing. And so, anyway, Prabhupada was looking, and I just felt so, I could have talked, but I was so in awe that I just didn't say anything. It was so much, it's very hard to describe it. It was just so powerful, the potency, you know, of just like Guru here, you're saying about just saying his name, you know, to speak of. So his look, you know, and it was just, everything was there in that look. It was a, even Kalipana said the same thing. Prabhupada looked in his eyes, and he said, I'll never forget it. And it was for me, it was enough to last me for ever, actually. Not only this life, but forever. It's like you always, you know, there's so many so-called gurus or people or, but it's like when you really meet the special, he's so potent, and I was just like, and then after some time, it seemed like, you know, minutes or many years, you know, he continued down the stairs. And with just him walking down the stairs, it was like, he didn't even walk like normal, you know. It's like, he floated down the stairs, you know. It's like, then he walked by and I didn't say nothing. But. So I just wanted to say it. It was so potent that even if he didn't talk, like I remember at the beginning of his classes, he would sometimes just say, like in New York, we actually brought a Vyasasana to the airport. They were open, very friendly in those days. So we brought, they didn't mind, we had Vyasasana set up. Not the temple Vyasasana, but another one, a portable. We had it set up in the airport, and all the people were watching, hundreds of people. And so, I get really excited. So, sorry. So one time in Los Angeles, probably came and had a big kirtan, of course, and then so they had all the giving out plate after plate after plate of cookies and rescues and burfi, and then all the boys would put garlands on, like one after another, like the 10 garlands piled up like this. You see the pictures. And then there were so many, I mean, like gardenias and roses and big fat roses, you know, and all these beautiful garlands. You probably take them up and set them down. And then again, they come and put more. And then you put like this and take it. And you smile and whole temple room packed. And then a whole Vyasasana is full of fruits, all different kinds of fruits. So we had this totally extended kirtan, and then probably was, I remember I held out my hand and then put the burfi, when he touches you with his hand, he puts it so exact, and he puts that burfi in, and when he touches you, it's, oh my God. And it's like, you never want to eat the burfi, and you never want to wash your hand, and you just want to hold it forever, of course I eat the burfi. But it's like, you know, it's just the touch of product is so, and then, so, and it's totally austere kirtan, and you know, also Prabhupada starts, he picks up this, like, oranges, dulled oranges, bananas, you know, peaches, whatever, everything. And can you imagine what happened if Prabhupada took a bunch of grapes and threw them up? Do you imagine, what would you think would happen? So, yeah, they went crazy, and they all started fighting over these fruits, and the whole temple room turned into like a fruit salad, you know? And it was like they were fighting for these fruits, and falling on the ground, and laughing, and crying, and fighting for these fruits, and eating, and oh, I can't believe it. It's unbelievable. Probably laughing, crying. The whole thing was full. You know, L.A. was rock. You know, Los Angeles is very opulent, you know? So, whole temple was packed, you know, with the throwing. But I remember all the kids, they would come. And probably a special thing for the kids, little kids. And they were all, they seemed like they knew him. They would stand and just, you know, kids usually lose their attention for something. But they would just stand and look around. And then they would come and get their cookie. Probably, and then they come again sometimes for another one. Probably near the coming too, you know. So, do I have time for one little quick one? So in San Francisco, Francisco, there was a big rock yacho. Was anyone there? I think it was 75. Was anyone there? So there was like 10,000 people there, right? Mostly hippies, of course. I mean, so the whole field, I just remember the whole field was full. And it was just seemed like they knew that somehow they knew Prabhupada was the guru of the hippies. They just knew it. And he was speaking, and there's so many. And he came out on the stage and he just goes, this, and it was like, yeah, I can't describe it. So he's in the video, though, you can see 50 pairs of cards all at the same time. You know, I used to get a little bit emotional, so it's hard to keep the focus, you know. This is my,
dancing.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, boy. I remember, in New York, he would just step off the Vyasa sign sometimes and just start moving his feet a little bit. And everybody would just jump and... I need some pumps, yeah. I'm just trying to stay focused in one city, but I should have wrote it down. No, I'm sorry, I wasn't prepared. I would write it down this time so I can flow. One more quick. I'll just make something simple. You know, everything probably did like, just to see him like drink water. You would just take the cup, you know, put it. And everybody was wow. Because it was, everything he did is our one look. And was, or he would sit on the outside and he would just look up and he would always look at everyone. And then he would do something. So, and he said, hey, that was enough. And we didn't even need to hear anything more because it was so spiritual. I'm sorry, I'm at a loss now.
Thank you, Guy Roger. I'd like to apologize for the time, you know. You've all my radical remarks.
So my name is Chinhami and I moved here last year. I had the good fortune of being born in a family where my parents were disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So they are disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So I always enjoyed hearing stories, their stories and all the stories of the disciples' experiences with Srila Prabhupada. And there was a time where I felt sad that I was never able to see him or experience that directly, his presence. And I was maybe a teenager at the time. And recently I have become to realize that I feel very fortunate to be surrounded by all of his followers, and just to see their enthusiasm and their devotion, their loyalty, their humility. I just want to imbibe that, and I'm so grateful to have their association in my life. So I began to realize that there's no difference between being personally present with Srila Prabhupada and being personally present with all of his devotees. So I want to thank you all, and I hope that I can please Srila Prabhupada by imbibing some of the qualities of his disciples, grand disciples, and his beautiful family. So thank you.
Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Shaya Bhutale Srimati Jayapataka Swami Tinamine Namacharya Padaya Nitaya Kipa Padaya Nigoda Padathamadaya Nagrat Ramadaya Ne Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Shaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Kucharine Nirvishesha Chinnavada Pashyata Vishukara Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So I'm not fortunate. And again, unfortunate, I'm in the movement. And I'm not a direct disciple of Srila Prabhupada, but like this morning when I was doing a little service in the deity room on a Prabhupada disciple, he said, "Are you a Prabhupada disciple?" I said, "No, but I'm more fortunate than you." So, "How come?" I said, "Because you get the chastisement and I get the sweet." You know, like as a grandfather will give to the grandchild, he'll have the grandchild more. So I'm more fortunate than you, I said. Then he said, "Yes, we get the chastisement. You know, Prabhupada will chastise his disciple, but his grand disciple he'll give the sweet. You know, will pamper, you know, in a spiritual way, a special way." So that way I feel I'm very fortunate. And I had a chance to serve my Guru Maharaj, Srila His Holiness Jayapada Goswami. And I remember those days in Mayapur, 70s, 78, 79, I was his servant. And like this morning, I was remembering when Ramya Prabhu was giving beautiful report, what Srila Prabhupada, preaching going on all over, especially in Florida, different project he was doing, he's giving good report. And same thing, my Guru Maharaj, we used to go after whole night to sleep, around 11, 12, or sometime 1 o'clock in the morning, I'll go with my Guru Maharaj and see whole night with everything. And we'll go to Prabhupada Samadhi Mandir. That time was like four walls, like 10 by 10 feet. Samadhi Mandir, Pushpa Samadhi Mandir. So we used to go there after visiting all area. And my Guru Maharaj will give report almost every day what he has done, what is to be done. And he used to give. And I said, that was very good, good relation and good connection. So same way, we have, good connection with my Guru Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, then goes on to Krishna. So this is very, very important. And I'll tell a small story that I heard from Madhu Visha Prabhu from many years before. I don't know if anybody told today, but we can always get the nectar again and again. So I remember, Prabhu, you are very close with Prabhupada. Can you tell us something which I never heard? Then he told me a story. I don't know if you all know or not. So he was telling that Prabhupada was in America, some temple he didn't mention, or maybe he mentioned, I forgot. And he was saying Prabhupada was on top and he would come down a couple of floor down, and there's a temple. So he had the indoor shoes. He'd come out with his shoes, new, brand new, because Prabhupada's shoes, brand new, indoor shoes. He would come from his room, come down, go to the temple, and give the darshanarthi, then Bhagavat, Guru Puja, then Bhagavatam lecture, then he'll put the shoes again and come up. So every day, same time, same thing. So one devotee was thinking, if I can have that shoes, the Prabhupada personally wore the shoes, it will be so nice. So he was like somehow greedy after the shoes. He said, I'd like to have the shoes. So what he did, he went to the shop and got an exact size, exact color, and exact thing, So he went and got the same shoes. So what happened? He was hiding the shoes. And when, next day, Srila Prabhupada came down and went to the temple, he changed the shoes. And the exact shoes, he put the shoes, his new shoes, and he took the Prabhupada's used shoes, Mahaprasada shoes. So he put it and everything. Then, Prabhupada, as usual, he, morning program, after that, he put the shoes and he came up. Then, he said, can you call the devotee? So he called the devotee and he said, don't try to trick your guru. You know, he was, my God, you know. He said, don't try to trick your guru. Because he was thinking that Srila Prabhupada didn't know. But after that he said, you can have the shoes. You know, that's all. So that means Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee and he knows everything. You know. So we cannot trick, we can always ask. You know, we can ask the blessing, but you know, we cannot do that. So that is, you know, really nice story and I was thinking to share with you. Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you.